Welcome to What You Don't Know, You Speaks Out, a show by and for about young people. It airs on the last Sunday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Tonight's hosts are me, Nina, and
Ida.
We've both been students at Willits High School. We want to thank the Benton and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for the Sound Partners grant that has now expired. You Speaks Out is a partnership between KZYX and the Mendocino County Youth Project. Tonight, our topic is racism in high schools. We will begin tonight's show with an interview Ida made with an African-American woman who taught at Willits High School last year. Following that, we will discuss with you, the listeners, the community listeners, the topics that are brought up. The call-in number will be 456-9991. We don't have a 1-800 number right now, so sorry, and we begin with the recording.
Hi, this is Ida Levinson, and I'm from Willits. I'm a senior this year at Willits High School. I went to a small school until I was in sixth grade, and then I started going to town school when I was in seventh grade. I'm half Japanese, and my dad is Jewish, and he's from New York City. And I just want to talk about my experiences at Willits High School. Right now, I have Janetta Mudwakalem with me, and she was a teacher last year at Willits High School, and I was her teacher's assistant. She was a resource teacher, and I'm just going to ask her some questions, and she's going to tell us about her experiences and her opinions about Willits High School and racism.
I'm Janetta Mudwakalem, or Ms. Mudwakalem, as the students know me. And I grew up in the Bay Area until I was 9 years old. Then I moved up north to Willits, where I attended Bechtel Grove Middle School in the fourth grade and graduated from Bechtel Grove and went on to Willits High School and completed my senior year at Willits High School and then journeyed back down to San Francisco, to the University of San Francisco, where I majored in biology and psychology. I began teaching after I graduated from the University of San Francisco in special education and completed my credentials at San Francisco State University, where I got my regular ed, special ed, and my master's in special education. And now I'm back at the University of San Francisco for my doctorate in international multicultural education because I have strong compassion for diversity. When I first came to Willits in fourth grade, I remember my experience being kind of painful in the beginning. I was the only African-American student in my class. And so I remember like within the first week of school, some of the students started calling me Spiderhead because I had braids and they were like shooting out, you know, from my head. And, you know, I guess you could say it looked like, you know, legs of a spider, but it was still, I mean, at the time, very derogatory and very painful for me. Like I didn't want to wear my hair in braids anymore after a while because it used to hurt my feelings for people to call me names. And then going through middle school through fifth, sixth, and seventh grade, I think especially for black women, it's really funny, but our hair is like important to us. Like I went through like hair transitions. And by seventh grade, I noticed that the less I wore my hair in braids, the more popular I was becoming, almost to the point where by seventh grade, I was like a student leader. I was elected to student council and I became a cheerleader. So I was like really popular among my class. Like everyone just thought I was really cool and spirited and pretty, but it was almost like so long as my hair wasn't in braids, like as soon as I'd put my hair in braids again, it would be like wearing dreadlocks, I think almost like for it's equivalent to my friends who have been going through the process of dreading where people think you're dirty or you're, you know, something's wrong with you when your hair is like that for so long. Like, how do you wash it? And, you know, you get all these questions that are so ignorant. Like, well, the same way you'd wash your hair. So I used to go through that a lot. And then by high school, I was extremely active and very involved with student council, cheerleading, sports. I was really active.
So now that you've been a teacher for a year, is it any different for you than it's being a student? And what are your experiences being a teacher?
Being a teacher in Willits, wow. Well, let's just say, actually, all 7 years of my teaching experience have been pretty trying, even from my first year of teaching in Marin, where, again, I was the only African-American teacher. So you really find yourself in a position of having to be a representative for your race. Working in Marin for 2 years, I found, while I was in isolation, being in Marin, it was very easy for me to get to the soulful juice that I needed, because I need to be uplifted, especially when I'm on an island. It's like being on an island by yourself, and you're just trying to cope and maintain. And so I coped fine in San Rafael. Then I went to Oakland, where I was surrounded by nothing but, you know, my folks, if you want to say it like that. And it was the inverse type of a struggle. There's a lot of inward racism going on there, a lot of jealousy, especially among women of color, you know, because we're all competing for the same stuff. We're all trying to do, you know, what we can to get on top, even if it means crunching the person below you, even if that person is your sister. Journeying up this way to Willits, in my first year of teaching, you know, Rod Gabrielson is the most amazing man. And, you know, he was here when I was in high school. He was one of my greatest kind of supporters in terms of me being a peer counselor at Willits High School. And when I told him I wanted to work back up here, he did everything he could to make sure I was comfortable, to make sure I had what I needed, and to make sure I felt safe. And within the first 3 weeks of my working in Willits, stuff was happening to me that I could tell wasn't the typical type of stuff that would happen to a first year teacher. That it was very much directed towards me, mm-hmm. and the color and my tone of voice and how I speak. And that's all cultural stuff. You know, how I communicate is how I've been raised to communicate. And yes, I'm a direct person. I will straight up tell you how it is. It's not about beating around the bush and being polite and not trying to crunch your toes. Because if your toes need to get crunched, they're going to get crunched. And that's a hard reality for some people who have always tried to walk around anything painful. And that's what a lot of men who aren't of color can do. You know, they don't have to acknowledge stuff. If it's not happening to them, then there's no reason for them to have to go around and crunch anybody's toes, because they're not uncomfortable. And I really felt that type of vibe at Willits High School, that as much as I complained, my windows would be wide open and, you know, my screen would be missing and my fish would be stolen. Yeah. And, you know, all these things would happen to me. And I'd report it mainly to people who were close to me, because I knew that they would listen and feel my pain. But I had a really hard time going to administrators and saying, look, this is what's happening to me. What can you do about it? Because deep down, I really felt like they didn't feel the obligation to do anything about it. Take Action is the program that I started in my study skills classes, and we got about close to $5,000 in funding. And Stan has a different budget of money. And then we have a tolerance grant that we just wrote using the information that I received from students about their reaction towards racism, and then the reactions of teachers and their responses towards racism, and finding that while we have about probably 90% occurrences every day of students making racial comments or yeah. derogatory comments, then only about 47% of the teachers were able to say they actually deal with it when it happens. And that's a pretty small percentage of if you look at every time the occurrence is happening, but that's a very limited number of occurrences where students are being directly confronted for what they're saying.
I think that when you brought up the point of you being afraid to tell the school administrators, I think maybe kids feel that way too, like they're not going to do anything about it, that they're not going to listen to them. And I think, you know, it's there. I mean, racism is happening, but how much do they hear about it? How much do the teachers hear about it? When did the principals hear about it? I mean, do the kids go to them for help? And do they think that they can get help and they're going to listen?
When I speak to a group of students, I can say the exact same thing as a person who is not a person of color could come in and say. And the students would act like they didn't understand what I just said. And it's not about the fact that my words are different. It's about who the words are coming from. And to me, that's appalling. And that's racism. That's saying that whatever you're saying is not important enough for me to listen to, number one. And number two, whatever you're saying, even if I heard it, you're not important enough for me to do it, kind of thing. And that's what I really felt, the attitudes among not only the students, but several of the teachers.
What are you doing to help prevent other teachers from being treated the same way you are treated?
Well, I think my first goal in terms of support for teachers, especially I think the female teachers and the few teachers of color we have, I don't even think we have that many, but
yeah, we have like one Chinese substitute.
There's such a minimal amount of diversity among staff in this town that my vision was to work towards getting money to help train our staff and our administrators on how to be a vision of tolerance, or, you know, to have an ability to see things from a different perspective. Tolerance for me is such like a, ooh, it just like puts chills down my back. It's like, we shouldn't have to be tolerated. But what we need to have is acceptance, you know, and unconditional support and understanding. And I think there's always conditions to where you get to be. There was a condition for me. There's always conditions, and those conditions aren't made known to me. I have to figure out what those conditions are. And that's the struggle with being a person of color in America, is there's all these rules and they're unspoken rules. You have to figure out what's going to make you a quote match.
I don't know if you ever got any pressure from parents because of what you did in, you know, in schools or whatever. I mean, were there any complaints from parents or teachers from what you were doing?
No, not. I mean, I think I was warned, you know, it's about that match for the district thing. And I was warned going into Bechtel Grove that I needed to do my job as a resource teacher, as though I hadn't really done my job as a resource teacher at the high school. And, you know, I take it with a grain of salt because I can't say that's exactly what the person meant when they said it to me. But the fact that they felt the need to say it to me after I've been teaching special education for 7 years tells me that there's some uncomfortableness with the format of how I designed my resource class. And I have to tell you, even in doing those journals about life, purpose, love, hope, faith, all of those words that really give a student a sense of morality, you know, and we wrote about life after the incident at the country store and the murder with the homeless man in town. And those kids really took to heart that process. And they really came forth with what was real to them. And that is what I respect in the learning process. That it's not always about what's in the text, but it's about getting kids where they're at and then taking them to a different level. And that's where our teachers need to learn how to teach to that degree. Because a lot of teachers rely solely on their textbooks. And they don't know how to go outside of the text. And if you can't go outside of the text, you really shouldn't be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Because teaching has to do with not only connecting students to text, but connecting them to society. You know, if they can't identify with what's happening in the world, if they can't tell you about, you know, what's going on in the Middle East, you know, they're not in tune with and in touch with what's happening here. And that's where teachers got to take our kids. And that's where I took my students. Every student that came into my room left with an understanding of the fact that this world has a lot to work through. And each one of them can make a difference, just like every person in this world can make a difference. And that's always my theme. And we're going to do the same thing at Bechtel Grove. So get ready. Confederate flag stuff was not allowed in my classroom ever. You know, if you wanted to wear it, you need to find somewhere else to go. And it was big for a lot of my students. They didn't understand, you know, why they didn't have the freedom of speech to wear that flag.
You know, the Confederate flag, I see it everywhere at the high school, not only in the high school, in town. You know, I don't understand why people would want to be so proud to wear it on their clothing or to write it in textbooks or whatnot. You know, I mean, you see it everywhere. And it's a symbol of hatred and racism and slavery. And if they do fully understand it, then I would like to go up to them and ask them about it. But I don't think if I did, they would be able to tell me what it meant. And so I think being a person of color, it's really offensive to see that. It's almost like seeing a neo-Nazi sign being worn on someone's clothing. And if I saw that, I don't know what I would do. But you're not allowed to do that. But you would think they would because it's freedom of speech. If they can wear, you know, if they can wear Confederate flags, then I should be able to wear whatever I want to school.
At our last faculty meeting we had at Willits High School, the discussion was about dress code and what students should or should not be allowed to wear to school. And the main focal point of the dress code dilemma was what females were wearing, because they were being too revealing with their breasts, with their short skirts. And not once did the topic of the Confederate flag come up in the dress code conversation. And for me, at the time, being on my way out of the high school, it was just one battle that I didn't feel like getting into at the time. But I think for the students, if you're going to start addressing girls or young women for having a shirt that shows too much cleavage and telling them they can't wear that or they need to cover that up, then you need to start doing the same for the people who come to school with Confederate flags that are a symbol of racism or white pride or whatever you want to call the symbol to be a representation of, because both are just as disturbing, you know. And for me personally, I'd almost rather see a girl with her body showing than the Confederate flag. I mean, if you really want to get down to it. And yet, why would that be the most disturbing thing? Well, then you have to look at the makeup of the staff. When you have all males and they're primarily white males, you know, the Confederate flag isn't a big deal to them. But seeing a girl that's very revealing is disturbing. Yes. And it's disturbing for you because it touches you in a different way. Well, try walking in my shoes for a day and seeing 40, 50 Confederate flags throughout the hallways, in books, on posters. You know, I had one teacher say, well, we're reading a story about the South, and, you know, the students were allowed to do a drawing of whatever they wanted. And there was, you know, all across the wall, plastered Confederate flags. And I said, well, was that the message of the story? Because otherwise, why would you have that as the symbol? I'm like, couldn't they have made a map of Mississippi?
That's all my questions. I think we covered a lot of ground. Do you have anything else to say, add in?
Just want to put that one probe in there for November 1st. Lee Moonwa is going to be here 11:30 till 3. And he's the director of two current movies that are out, The Color of Fear and Walking Each Other Home. And he has a third movie coming out. They're all documentaries. They're not movies. But they're all dialogues between primarily men, particularly all men of color, with maybe one or two men of European descent who have typically not experienced any kind of interactions with people of color. They've been really secluded, living in their suburbia world, you know, gated communities where there's nothing coming in but people like themselves. And they have discussions and dialogues about what it means to be where they're at in America. And the dialogues and the discussions are so powerful and so deep. It's just deep. Like when you start hearing these stories and then you start hearing people, especially the two men, try to convince the men of color that are in the group that they're overreacting, that it's really not that bad. Limunwa is very much about having dialogues. He wants to have the conversations. He wants the conversations to come out, to emerge. He wants to hear people try to justify why it's okay to arrest a black man just because he looks suspicious. He wants that kind of stuff to come out. And I think we need, as a town, we need to hear it. And as a police force, they definitely need to hear it, because even my cousins that lived here have been harassed. You know, every 2 to 3 weeks when they were here, they'd get arrested or, you know, pulled over or questioned because they looked like someone that, you know, had done something in Santa Rosa or Cloverdale or wherever, you know. And, you know, it's bogus. It's really some bull. So I think we're ready. Come hear Limunwa and then, you know, sign up for other dialogues. We're going to recruit people to go hear more dialogues. That's where the rest of our training money is going to go to, our diversity dialogue trainings. We're taking students. We're taking community members. We're taking firefighters, policemen, nurses, librarians, anyone who wants to come, janitors. Final thing I wanted to put out there to the community is that we currently have a $23,000 tolerance education grant given to us by Community Prevention in Action and the California State Department of Education. And I really want community members to call in, as many as you can, and tell us some ideas you have for spending this $23,000 to help improve the level of education and awareness in our community. And also, feel free to even come by to the library on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6:30. We have discussions on better ways to promote awareness in our town using this money as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Janetta Modwakalim, for coming and speaking and giving us, you know, your thoughts and letting us hear what you feel and think. And it was really fun. I'm glad to hear it.
Thank you for inviting me.
You are listening to Youth Speaks Out. I am Nina and
Ida.
We'll begin this part of the show by discussing the topics brought up in the interview, and we'll describe our experiences and research into the topics brought up. In a little while, we'll invite you to join us in a discussion with your insights and questions at 456-9991. So, Ida, do you think racism is present in the high schools of Mendocino County?
Well, first of all, in my opinion, if you break down, you know, racism, what I feel that it's, you know, one race believes that they're more privileged and they're superior to another race. And if I didn't feel that racism wasn't present in high schools and in our community, I wouldn't be here talking about it and on this show right now. You know, it's a big issue and it's an important issue that needs to be expressed and talked about.
Definitely. I feel that sometimes it seems like a lot of people don't realize that racism is so much here because it's so not, it's like if you're white, it's not really aimed towards you, and so you don't feel it. But it's definitely, when you're a person of color, you definitely feel it, and it's definitely very present.
Yeah, because, like, in my opinion, if you are not directly affected in any way by racism, I think you stop caring about it, you don't care about it, or you just don't think about it because it's not present in your life. You don't face it every single day on the streets or, you know, going to the supermarket or anything, you know. So, you know, I think people need to start opening their eyes and realizing that it does affect us all in the long run, you know, in our community.
Definitely. I mean, just being at the high schools and seeing Confederate flags, I mean, I totally believe in freedom of speech, absolutely, but I think if there was a swastika symbol that people would really get upset. And also, I have seen many, many kids get in trouble for wearing drug symbols on their shirts. And to me, I mean, if it's freedom of speech, then you should be able to have drug symbols too. So that's kind of a, like, oxymoron, or I don't know, it's just not right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, some points that Janetta brought up in the interview about the Confederate flag is that, you know, if a person looks at it and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't strike them emotionally, or they're not emotionally impacted, they don't really care. And I think that's why kids are allowed to wear those kind of things at school, and that it's tolerated. You know, to me, I don't tolerate that at all, or any other racist symbol. And that's definitely one of, like, the top, you know, on the top list there, you know. Definitely. Confederate flags, you see it everywhere, you know. I mean, we talked about that in the interview.
And I think so many kids can get away with it, too, because of the Confederate flag can have kind of double meanings. So they kind of can, like, beat around the bush and be like, oh, well, I don't mean it really racist. I just mean it I'm proud of the, you know, like, South and whatnot. So that's a hard one.
Yeah, we don't even live in the South, you know. That's the that we live in Northern California, you know, and we may have family that live in the South. But, you know, come on. You can be proud of your heritage. I'm proud of my heritage, you know. I'm half Japanese. I'm very proud of it. But I think, you know, the Confederate flag means so much more than just history. And, you know, you go, you ask a student, you ask someone about it, and in reality, do they really feel that way? Do they really feel racist thoughts towards someone? Like, were they going to support what the Confederate flag really means to them, you know? Like, if you ask them, could they tell you? Mm-hmm. Could they tell you about the history?
Definitely, and a lot of kids just get angry when talking to them about that. I remember being in high school, when I'd see Confederate flags, it would really upset me. But I think a lot of people in high school are so, they want to fit in, they want to be cool. They it's like they'd rather not say anything than have to stick up for something, even if they don't believe in it. You know, it's like it's easier just to kind of go with the flow and not make a comment. And I think, you know, people really need to start being more outspoken and saying what they believe, because there's a lot of stuff that is not right that's going on.
Yeah, like with, I think that certainly like around our age group, you know, even younger at Bechtel Grove, at, you know, junior high school, kids need a sense of themselves in a group that they fit in. And by wearing these clothings or by like having racist thoughts or, you know, harassing kids, that's their way of fitting in, because other kids are going to look at you and say, oh yeah, you're really cool. But you may not really, you know, agree with those things. It's just about finding your place.
Yeah, it's always really amazed me how much it's tolerated in the high schools. It's just, I think it's really upsetting personally.
I think that another issue is racism is tolerated by, you know, the faculty at schools. And, you know, it was brought up in the interview again that, do you feel that you can go to your teachers or your peers even and, you know, tell them about your problems and telling them about, like, being harassed, you know, or seeing these things that emotionally impact you and anger you? Are they going to listen to you? They may listen to you, but do they really care? And are they going to do anything to help you?
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel that, you know, there's a couple teachers that I could go talk to if anything happened to me, but, you know, I wouldn't go to my principal.
And it's hard because you want to see a difference. You want to see, you know, the Confederate flags taken down. You want to see, but it just seems like it's not happening. I wasn't at high school in the time, but last year, I believe there was a anti-racism kind of seminar thingy where a guy, TJ, if I believe his name, came and talked. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that, Ida?
Yeah, he was like a ex-neo-Nazi, and he came in and he did this whole presentation, you know. First of all, he talked really fast. It was really hard for me to understand him. But so we, you know, there was two assemblies, 45 minutes each. And we went in and he just gave his whole spiel, like why he was got involved and what they were doing. And, you know, the first thing that he said is he wasn't trying to glorify the neo-Nazi group or the organization. And he wasn't bragging about it. But that's what I got out of it. When I left the auditorium, that's what I felt. That's all he was doing. And his message, what he was trying to do, was good. He was trying to teach kids about, you know, racism and the effects and what it does to your life. And, you know, he quit the group because of his kids and saw that, you know, his doings, what he was doing in his life with the group was affecting his children and that his children could be harmed in one way or another.
Yeah, that's what I heard about the thing too, was that it wasn't like he was really regretting it. It was more just that he didn't want his kids to get hurt by it because he was talking about, wasn't he talking about beating people up?
And yeah, I mean,
lots of violence. And so it wasn't actually like a big moral choice for him, just like, oh, he didn't want his kids to get hurt, which, to me, that's really hard to believe that the high school would have that there. And, you know, that, I don't know, I wonder if they pre-listened to his whole thing.
Well, I talked to Janetta, and she actually had spent the night before with him, like at dinner or something, and he was saying, you know, what he wanted to do was shock us, to shock the audience and to really get a reaction out of it, out of us, you know. And so, I mean, that's what happened. We were blown away. And but the thing is that we didn't have any pre-discussion. We didn't know this guy was coming until like a couple days before he did. And after the assembly, we didn't really talk about it at all. We never really discussed what he was saying in any of our classes, at least for me. And I thought, like, you know, that's kind of defeating the purpose. Yeah, you're throwing us this guy and he's sending out a great message, but are we taking it to heart? Are we doing anything about it? I mean, we listened to him, but then just what next? You know, what are we going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always been interesting growing. I've lived my whole life in Willits, and, you know, there are not very many African-American families here or very many Asian families or anybody really of color. And it's like I wonder why that is. Is it because people come here and they get scared away, or like what, you know, what is the cause of it?
Oh, for me, the cause of racism, I look at, and you have to bring it back to the root of it. And I think it has to do with the parents and your peers. You know, a lot of times you just don't develop develop racism all of a sudden. You know, one day you wake up and you're like, oh, well, I'm racist and I feel that I'm a lot better than all these other people. It's your parents, I think. You know, at a young age, you're influenced by your parents.
Mm-hmm. And also, I'd say, like, not knowing about different kinds of people, you know, not seeing them, it's like they're different from you. And so you're kind of like, well, you know, you don't know. You're scared. You have fear.
Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, fear, they're going to take your jobs. You know, when you get older, that you're fearful they're going to take your jobs or your home, or, you know, they're going to move into your community. And, you know, what next? You know, it's a lot of it comes from fear and jealousy, I think.
Definitely. It's interesting.
Well, I think, you know, especially in a small community like ours, what we need to do is to bring different outlooks and bring resources to this community, especially Willits. I know we were just talking about how Willits is one of the most racist towns, you know, around here. And I never realized that before talking, you know, to this girl from Laytonville saying, oh, you know, everyone knows that thing about Willits, that they're really racist, and, you know. So I think what we need to do, like what Jeanette is doing right now, what she's doing is bringing opportunity to this community and doing it for us.
Definitely. I see racism as basically ignorance, you know. It needs to be addressed. People need to be educated. There needs to be programs, and so.
Yeah, like this Lee Moon Wah, I think that's great. I mean, that's exactly what we need. But we need people to support that.
One other interesting thing is we, through Jeanetta and the grant, we do an African dance class every Thursday. And it's kind of funny because we do it in the recreational Grove Park. And it seems like very often people just kind of stare at us, you know, because we have live drumming and we have dancing and, you know, we get wild and it's a great, awesome class. You know, it's like real African dance. But I just think it's so interesting how people will be really scared. And One time, there was some really like direct racism. Someone came in and like a couple years ago, it was going on, not even through the high school or anything, but just someone was like, what is that, like witchcraft? And just not knowing, you know, just the not being educated.
But I also like, I remember we used to do it at the high school gym and there'd be baseball games like right next to the gym and people would walk by and they would stare. They'd be like in awe. Like, they'd never seen such dancing before, and it was amazing. And I thought that, you know, they were just fascinated by it. They were just so different from what they were used to.
Definitely. It's pretty interesting form of dance.
Yeah, it's great. So it's Thursdays at
5:30. It's an awesome class, live drumming, dancing. Anybody that would like to find out more about it or come check it out, Boy Scout little room in the recreational Grove Park.
Yeah, so. Definitely come.
Let's see here. We should take some calls if someone like to. Our phone number is 456-9991, and we'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I think that we, you know, it'd be great to hear what you guys think about this issue because it's out there.
And even if it doesn't seem like it's in our lives very much, I think it's definitely very much, not to bring it back to the Confederate flag, but I mean, just when driving down Highway 101, a little bit north of Willits, you see a huge Confederate flag hanging, which is a memorial for a kid that died. But to me, I think when seeing the Confederate flag, it's like a direct racial, you know, it's just like directly racist. So I believe we have a caller.
Hi.
Hi, caller. You're on there.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to thank you for the program. It's very interesting. And
good.
The whole idea is something that really should be pursued.
Definitely.
Double quick.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See, that's what we need to hear. We need support, but we also need to hear, you know, if you have different thoughts or, you know, something you feel different, so just tell us. We'd like to have a good discussion.
Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wondered why you...
Turn off your... Do you have your radio on?
Yeah.
Okay, turn it off.
I just wondered why you consider the rebel flag racist.
For me, I just think if you were... Well, I mean, just the whole fact that the South, like, you know, it was a war on not only racism, not only slaves, but economics, and a lot of stuff comes into play. But, you know, I think a lot of people do see it as a racist thing. I do. I think when Black people or African American people see it, they take it as just a hate, you know, pure hate.
Because there was a lot of hatred in the South during that time when the war was happening, even now, towards Black people or towards people that were, you know, different, of a different race, you know, and like the Ku Klux Klan, you know, they used the rebel flag as one of their symbols also, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, but, you know, I mean, why do you consider it racist here?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, too, is, like, why would it not be racist here? I mean, it's not like we live in the South, so it's not like we have Southern pride. So if here it seems like it's especially racist to me.
Yeah, even more racist than it would be in the South, especially so, Northern California.
You think it should be up or down?
I am a strong believer in all of our freedoms, but I take it, it offends me.
Why?
Well,
are you white or Black?
I'm white.
Yeah, me too. But why?
But just to see that people could think that way, and that someone would want to try and cause some hate to a African American person or anybody, you know, it's like we're all people. We're all the same, no matter what skin color we have. It's like we're all trying to survive. And
well, I don't like that's a perfect example why people don't care. Just because she's white doesn't mean that she doesn't care about it or anyone of it. Like, that's, you know, has European descent. Even though it doesn't affect you, it does in a way. Either emotionally it affects you or you care about it. It's an issue that needs to be expressed and talked about, even if you're not a person of color.
Okay, here's the deal. If I'm white and I'm also Jewish and I'm also mm-hmm. Indian. Now, supposing I put a Star of David flag up on my house.
Great.
That offend people?
No, because,
well, it could possibly offend some people.
Well, it's too damn bad. I mean, if I want to put one up, I'm going to put it up.
Well, then do it.
You know? I mean, I don't believe there's really that kind of racism going on here.
Are you from Willits?
I've been here 4 years, and I've been in this county for like 20-something years. And I don't think that it's really an issue. I think there's more...
But I'd say it's not an issue very much because look at the population of people that are not white. There's a huge white population and there's hardly any. You know, there's some Hispanics.
Yeah.
And there's very few African Americans,
right,
and very few Asians. But I would say that there's a reason for that, you know? I'd say that a lot of people are driven out. And actually, I have a friend who's African American, and he has come to Willits and said that out of all the places he's been and he's traveled, Willits has been the most racist place. When he's walking down the street, people yell stuff at him, you know, just, and he's just a normal, you know, he's just another person. I think there's a lot of racism here. I just think it's not discussed very much because there aren't a lot of African Americans that are stepping up and saying, yeah, and if they probably did, they'd probably get targeted.
Yeah, I mean, the also thing is, how much do you notice? I mean, if you're not, again,
if you're not the person getting the things yelled at you, and you're not the person, you know, taking the Confederate flag as a
no, direct... No, I have a lot of family, and I mean, we have no prejudices in that, you know, at all. I mean, friends.
Uh-huh.
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't make any difference what color they are, and I have a daughter-in-law who lives in this town, and she's from Thailand, and I have a grandchild who's half Indian and half Thai, and, you know...
Yeah,
I have Hispanic grandchildren in San Antonio, six of them.
Well, we're going to take another call. Thank you very much for calling, though.
I don't feel it, though, and will it?
Keep your eyes open. Hello, caller?
Hi. I just wanted to say that the last call is exactly what you guys are talking about.
Mm-hmm. Thank
exactly.
you.
it reminds me of the days when... people would say to me, oh, there's no racism in Willits. There aren't any black people in Willits.
Oh, wow. Directly connected, maybe?
And not connected at all with how Native Americans are treated in this town.
Absolutely.
How Asians are treated in this town. How people of descent from India are treated in this town. It's very, very sad that the national hypocrisy is racism, and I think the fact that you guys are doing something about it and bringing it to the fore and bringing it on the radio is highly to be commended.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank
Excellent.
You.
I mean, it's totally true, you know, no matter if you're white, African-American, anything, it's like we all need to step up. We all need to, you know, stop the hate.
Mm-hmm. And also another point is just it's not a white and black thing. There's racism within, you know, race. Like, you know, there's Asians that, you know, there's Japanese that don't like Chinese. You know, I mean, it's within every single group there's racism and hatred. You know, it's just not as simple as that.
One thing that I always thought was interesting, too, about Willits is, like, you totally can directly see where, you know, the different people live. Like, I mean... on the, let's see, the north end of town where all the nice restaurants are and stuff, how often do you, or there is now one, like, Hispanic store, but, I mean, not very often do you see a large group of, like, Hispanic people walking around here. It's mainly on the other end of town, you know? So it's kind of interesting just how it's all grouped, and, you know, it's weird. It's racist is what it is. And we'd love to have you call in at 456-9991 and hear what you have to say, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have stuff to say.
Mm-hmm. I think that also about what you're saying, how our town is very segregated. It's also in our schools, too, where a lot of the Hispanic and Mexican kids do not mix with the white kids. You usually don't see that. I mean, there's a place where they all sit. And they usually don't mingle with the white kids or anything like that. You know, it's really segregated.
Yeah. Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Hello?
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 Do you have your radio turned off?
Are there two of us on the radio?
No, you're good to go.
Huh?
Is your radio off?
No, my radio's on.
Okay, you got to turn it off.
Yeah, but hold on. I really want to talk.
Okay, just turn it off. You were just saying something. Let's see.
Is she still there?
Yeah, no, she's coming, but we can talk about something else.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing I wanted to say was what you were saying about
my radio's way in the other room.
Oh, okay. Okay, now you're good to go.
First time I've ever had a feedback. I am absolutely thrilled you people are talking about this. I had no idea this was happening in Willits. I'm on a ranch up above Laytonville, about 20 miles, and I've been involved. I'm a retired teacher. I've been involved with a racial issue ever since 1940. If you
wow.
48, I guess it was. I was working on my my master's degree in University of Nebraska, and, of course, at that time there was a lot of racism. And I was going with a Nigerian, so, you know, I've really been through the whole process.
Absolutely.
And I am absolutely appalled that the administration, the faculty, and don't do something about this. This is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
I've never heard such a thing in a little town.
I know. And I'd say it's I mean, Willits is definitely bad, but I'd say rural Northern California has a lot of it all over.
I'm in a mountain community up here, and there are people from everywhere, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There are black people. There's no prejudice among any of the people up on this mountain, but that's another story. But what I'm concerned about is what can we do? I mean, I'm really appalled that this is going on. And, well, I've been down there to theater performances,
mm-hmm.
and I have written a unit. I write curriculum, although I'm retired. And I've written a curriculum on the criminal justice system on this whole issue of prejudice. And of course, it's Latinos as well as black people, but I really think something should be done, and there's some meetings that I could come to and talk to these people. I wonder if there's any knowledge about the Poverty Law Center and their whole curriculum on teaching tolerance. Do you know anything about this?
Janetta has a group called Take Action. She has this $20,000 grant, and you know, I'm glad that you brought that up, because there's things that we need ideas what we should do with this money. Because we have this money to...
This doesn't even cost money. The Poverty Law Center down in, I think it's either Alabama or Georgia, has been working on the issue of racial prejudice for as long as I can remember,
mm-hmm.
40 years. And they have wonderful curriculum. They have videos. They have all kinds of...
Oh, for like schools and stuff to...
Everything for schools to teach tolerance.
Well, that's what we need at Willits High School.
Okay, darling, you must get some other material and bring it...
Absolutely.
In, show it in assembly and get it into the teachers. How can those teachers let this go on? This idea of having a... It's. I agree with the wonderful black teacher who I can't imagine living with this situation.
Yeah.
Having the Confederate flag all over the town.
I mean, it's gone on way too long.
Oh, it's incredible. I think we should. I just am so appalled. I can't get over it. I just feel so upset about it. I'm 84 years old. I'm still working in curriculum. I'm teaching teachers. I'm. Very active politically, and I really think we should do something about it. And I'm ready to come down and talk.
Yeah,
to
you,
good.
Give you ideas. You can use my curriculum. I've written it with the History Social Science Project. Don't your social studies teachers get into this at all?
In my honors English class, we would have discussions about racism because we would read core novels like Huck Finn and Song of Solomon, but.
A class teach you To Kill a Mockingbird?
Yeah.
Yeah?
But that was like my sophomore year, and we really didn't discuss it that much.
Well, I mean, what's the use of teaching it if you don't talk about the values?
Exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. And that's what, you know, I'm glad that you brought it up, because this is what we need to do. We need to expose kids to different materials. We need to have assemblies.
There's so much childhood material on racial prejudice out there. Do they do this? Do they start in the elementary or in kindergarten, primary grades, and teach racial tolerance? I can't stand this. How can this go on?
I know.
I can't believe it.
Thank you so much for calling in. And,
well, bless your heart. And my name's Margie Dutton. I live up on a ranch, and my telephone number is
984-8296.
I'll be willing to come down. I have to go down to a doctor's appointment next week. Not this coming week, but the following week. But
okay.
I'll be ready and willing to come down.
Thank you so much.
And get something going. And be sure you look up the Poverty Law Center right away.
We wrote it down.
On email, and get the material from there and start getting this town aware of what's going on in the world.
Thank you
so much. That's awesome.
Here, bless your heart. I'm so glad to hear you talking about an issue instead of a stupid drug problem.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, caller, you lost us. Okay, our number is 456-9991, and I think our caller's calling us back. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, just wanted to let you all know that I'm really impressed and thrilled with what you're doing.
Thank you.
With your show, and I think it's really pretty amazing to just bring such an important issue to people's awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's frustrating to hear people struggle with you having to explain why you have a problem
yeah.
with the Confederate flag, and that a think it's, like you said, people don't get that unless you're made to feel uncomfortable yourself in the situation, that you don't think it's going on.
Yeah.
Because I do stuff in the schools, and I'm amazed at these kids that are like, oh, no, we're fine here. We all get along great.
Everything's perfect.
Yeah, so it's just amazing when you have the benefit of the white skin and you don't have to be in the situation to be made uncomfortable.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I encourage you to keep up the good work.
Right on. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Hello, caller? No, hold on. Caller?
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Okay, two things. Years ago, when we first came here, my husband and I, you wouldn't even see a Hispanic on the street, and yet they worked in some of the industries, like Little League industry and so forth. You know, so there's been some improvement. At least now you do see them on the streets, and there's, you know, they're out, their presence is known. The other reason that so many of them live down on the south end of Willits is because it's not just a race thing, it's a class thing.
Absolutely,
they're
yeah.
poor, you know, and they can't afford the nicer homes. So, you know, that's classism and racism are very close.
They go walking hand in hand.
Yes, they are. They are, and I just wanted to bring that up. And it's a good program, young ladies, and we appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
I think another thing that we need to touch upon is the history that's not taught in schools. Last year I did my history project on Columbus's settlement of the New World, and I think when you're in fifth or sixth grade, you learn about Columbus and that he discovered America, and, you know, and I think that I would almost still believe that if I didn't do this project. Like, I wouldn't really know anything. And I did my own research, and I was just appalled to find out what really happened. And, you know, what angered me the most is we weren't taught about that in school. We weren't taught about what he did. He massacred these Native Indians, you know, and we aren't taught about those kind of things in schools. So, you know, I asked my history teacher, can we talk about this? Can we, you know, can we at least to have a discussion, or, you know, even just go through this? And she said we couldn't because there was some state law, or not even a state law, it was just some scandal, like, we couldn't, we already touched upon that, you know, time period, so we couldn't do it in class. But, you know, there's so much out there that we aren't taught in school.
Yep, it's definitely very, like, chosen what we get to learn. Well, we have another caller, so...
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, I'll be brief. In the early 40s, if I'm not mistaken, 1940s, Georgia Pacific brought people out here from the South, and they became strike breakers, and their relatives, of course, are still here. I don't know if it has any bearing on this, but something.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
So maybe that could have something to do with all the Confederate flags, maybe not as actual racist things, but as Southern pride or something.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's very interesting. I never knew that.
And if someone wants to call in, we have a couple more minutes, 456-9991.
I'd like to hear some kids call in. You know, I usually listen to the show when a lot of adults call in. So I'd like to hear what some, you know...
The youth
feels, yeah.
Okay. Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Okay, thanks. Hi, do I need to turn my radio off?
Yes.
Okay, hang on a second.
Should probably address that before, you know, we get any calls. Remember to turn off your radio.
I would like to, thank you for... what you're presenting to the community. I would like to address the all the unspoken pain for racism that's happening in our community. The woman who couldn't understand why the Confederate flag wasn't a problem had children of a mixed background, maybe never even spoke to another person of color. I mean, there was so much unspoken pain.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I have a friend who has several children, and these children have all been stopped for driving while having skin of a different color,
yep.
which is a national crime.
Mm-hmm.
So this this racism is not only present in children who've been raised from kindergarten to think like that, but it's present in an institutionalized way.
Absolutely. I mean,
of course. So it happens. I mean, in this one child, for example, straight A student, straight arrow, no drugs, no alcohol, and he was constantly stopped because he could have been taken for Indian,
yep,
or Arab, or, you know, or Latino, or whatever, you know. He happened to be Asian. But anyway, I'm
thank you.
I'm speaking for all the people who didn't hear about the fact that you were going to have this wonderful program and who don't have haven't had the chance to express themselves.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye. All right. We have another caller. Do we? Oh, yeah, we do. Okay, here we go. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I wanted to help you all with some of the things you could maybe do.
Do you have your radio off?
Yeah. Some of the things you could do is that the amnesty program that was instituted way back when, I think it was Reagan was on, and automatically so many millions of Hispanics were allowed to just go down and get papers and become citizens, was going to happen again here in the United States, and all of a sudden George Bush decided against it. And so I think we should contact all of you, as long as you guys got money for postage stamps or emails or whatever, get a hold of all of our representatives and try to open that up again, because there were 6 million Hispanics now who are in the country, and it's really hard on them because you have to sneak around the corners and hide, not because of their color, not because they're not light, but simply because they're not legal.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right, thank you.
Thank you.
Work on that. That'd be great.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you.
If you want to get involved and if you have ideas how to spend this $23,000, we meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6 p.m. at the Wiltz Library, and it's part of the Tolerance Education Grant, the Community Prevention and Action in California State Department of Education. So please get involved.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Mina.
Hi. Daida.
Hi.
Cool.
I want to know when the documentary was that Janetta was talking about.
Oh, that's November.
November 1st, 11:30 through 3:30 at the Willits Community Center.
Good.
Yeah.
Good Excellent. Job, girls.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Cool.
Well, we've definitely talked about a lot of stuff today, and if we have any more, do we have it? Hello, caller?
Hello. There's just one thing that I wanted to mention.
Yes?
I think that this program is far superior to things you've done before, but I wanted to say something else about the Confederate flag. People who show the Confederate flag are not very patriotic,
mm-hmm,
because our Union is what counts, and to show a separatist flag is really very, very bad.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you'd like to know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely, you know, separate, just like make racism separating someone out. But
yes. But it has a larger context, and people who do that are extremely unpatriotic Americans.
All right, thank you. That's all for this month's Youth Speaks Out, What You Don't Know. Our host tonight has been me, Ida.
And Nina.
Thanks to our callers, one of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue. So call-ins are what makes the show happen. We're happy to have been on the sixth show broadcasted from the Willits Studio. Again, we'd like to thank the Benton and Robert Wood Johnson Foundations for their funding of the past 12 shows. Youth Speaks Out will continue on the last Sunday of each month as it has for over 3 years. Youth Speaks Out is a partnership between KZYX and the Mendocino County Youth Project. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX or the Youth Project. They are the views of those who have expressed them. We are pleased to announce that this program has now has its own website. We're at www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. That's www.youthspeaksout.net. We encourage listeners to give us feedbacks on our shows. You can do it through email at our website or by writing us at Youth Speaks Out, P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Our next show will be on the last Sunday in September. That's September 30th at 6 p.m. Thanks for listening and good night.